You're listening to another top-rated radio show on the USA Talk Radio Network. You're listening to another top-rated radio show on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Welcome to the American Hour with your host, Commander Tom Garcia, on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Good afternoon. This is your co-host, Paula Lozon Ostman. We've got mostly sunny day here up in Boston, near steady temperatures in the upper 70s. Your host, Commander Tom Garcia, is not available this afternoon. He is traveling. We have with us our very good friend, Dick Bierenbach, who will be hosting the show this afternoon. He will be interviewing Beth Dillaha, who is a former Winter Park, Florida commissioner, discussing SunRail, which is a big government spending that we can't afford. And if it passes in Florida, it will be coming to a city near you. So go right ahead, Dick, and take it away.
Thank you, Paula. Actually, she had a very good introduction. We have SunRail that the governor will be looking at passing or stopping one way or the other. The people of Florida do not want it. There are a few that do. But let's talk to somebody that knows a lot more about it than I do, and that is Beth. How are you doing today, Beth?
I'm good. How are you, Dick?
I'm fantastic. What can you tell us about this SunRail?
Well, I can tell you a lot about it. It's just where would you like to even begin? But basically, it's a commuter rail, heavy diesel commuter rail project that's been in the works for quite a few years now and would run from Volusia County in central Florida down through Orange County for 32 miles for the phase one portion, and then phase two would go through Osceola County for a total of about 61 miles. So it's requiring that the state of Florida purchase the 61 miles of track from CSX Railroad, and then passenger rail would run on this starting in May of 2014. And the deal is that the state, well, Central Florida counties, the taxpayers would pay for the annual operating and maintenance costs of the corridor while CSX still uses it 50% of the time. And we still have freight running unlimited during the evening, so it's not going to eliminate.
Would they be paying us a fee to be running on our tracks then, or what?
They'll be paying a fee of some sort, absolutely. But it's the state that's fully responsible, with the counties paying for this, responsible for the maintenance of the corridor and then the operating costs for the passenger rail system.
Okay. We all realize that we don't live in the 1800s anymore, to where you took a train to a town and then you could just walk around the town without any problems. If you take a train from Volusia to Orange County, I have to wonder where this train is going to stop and how you are going to get around once you get off this train.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you have to drive to the depot to get on the train and park your car.
Right.
What do
right.
we do afterwards?
And these were the questions that were asked when high-speed rail was being analyzed by Governor Scott for Florida. It was, okay, you know, once you get off the train, how are you going to get to your destination? So that's going to require getting onto a bus or taking a cab if you're not lucky enough to be dropped off, you know, right at the front door of wherever you're going. So this system would also require that we have a feeder bus system that could meet all the commuters coming off of the different stations to take them to their ultimate destination.
Would the train be making any stops between point A and point B?
Well, it would be making stops all along those Central Florida cities or the cities within the Central Florida counties. So, yeah, it would be making stops in these little towns, Winter Park, Maitland, Longwood, Altamont. Orlando is considered the urban core, and as you know, with commuter rail projects, they are put together for commuters in outlying areas to be able to get to jobs that are in an urban core. So ultimately, mm-hmm. it would be Orlando that would benefit, if anyone benefits at all, from participating in the project.
Basically, what they'd be looking for is people riding the train going to work.
Right.
And now
right.
from the depot, they have to figure out how they're going to get to their place of employment, especially
right.
if it's another 5 to 10 miles away from where the train stops.
Right.
And
we know
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know this about me. I'm a retired police officer.
Okay.
The people of this country, and I've talked to officers all over the country, we are an impatient nation. When we want to go someplace, we want to go there now. We don't want to sit around and wait. We don't want to have to go to a depot and wait for a train. Most of us don't even like standing waiting for a bus. It stands to reason, if this train is going to be making a lot of stops, it's going to take quite some time to get to your destination, even if it does take you right to where you want to go.
Right. Absolutely.
In having, pardon?
No, I was just going to say, and you know, when it comes to getting from point A to point B, people want to do it as quickly and efficiently as they can. So if you have to take a car to a parking lot, park your car, get out of the car, wait for a train, and hopefully it's on time, get on the train, then stop at all the stops along the way, say if you're going to downtown Orlando. Then once you get off the train at downtown Orlando, you're going to have to take a taxi or a bus to wherever you need to go, unless it does drop you off right at your office building. And then you've got to do the same thing when you go back home. So by the time you add up all that time that it takes and the money to park your car and to pay the fare both ways, it's expensive and time-consuming.
Very time-consuming when you could probably do it, I would say, in half the time by driving your car.
Right.
That's my yep. point in saying we are an impatient nation. When we want to do something, we want to do it now. We want to get there now and do it. The average person today drives their vehicle between 5 and 10 miles over every posted speed limit. And the great majority of your police departments across the country do not write speeding tags until you are at least 10 miles over the limit, and most of them like to write them at 15 to 20 over the limit.
Mm-hmm.
To show that the person is really has intent to speed. But most of the people today will drive at least 5 miles over the limit.
Mm-hmm.
And they will not put up with riding these rails.
Well, the projected ridership for this is only 2,150 people, 2,150 commuters. That's it. And I had read somewhere that there are about 175,000 or 180,000 commuters on I-4 daily. So, you know, you're talking about putting together a very expensive system to transport very few people.
Okay.
And as
we
were saying, it's a project we don't need with money, you know, funded with money that we don't even have.
If we look at the rail systems in other locations of the country, Washington, D.C., New York, these cities were built around the subway and the train system. They were put in at the time the cities were growing. Even those trains maintain themselves to the core city area. Now, we're not talking Core City here. You're not talking of the city of Port Orange or Daytona Beach putting in a rail system to run all over the city so you don't have to drive your car around town, which is what we have in New York and D.C. They have a very good system, but it is still restricted basically to their city. Our system would not do that. We're going from one county to another. We're going slow. These rails are not made for high speed. When they talked about the high-speed rail, which died, that was a joke. The high-speed train would be going slower than a freight train. It was not high-speed rail.
Right.
But
right.
Now, I am a retired railroad man also. When I left the service, I worked for a railroad called Great Northern Railroad, which ran across the whole northern part of the United States, from Minnesota out to Washington. It was built by a man by the name of James J. Hill. And at the time that I was working for the railroad, the man that owned it at that time was Louis Hill, which was a grandson of James J. Hill. My point in saying that is that was private industry. Yes, the government helped out with the land purchases, but other than that, it was up to the private industry to build the rail system, maintain the rail system, buy the cars, do everything out of their own pocket. Today, what we have is the government is going to do this. The taxpayers are going to pay for this. Which answers my next question. If this is a good system, why isn't somebody in private industry building it to make themselves a few billion dollars?
Right. Well, yeah. Well, it's you know it. I know it. You know, these rail systems don't pay for themselves, and we know that. But, you know, there is a limit as to how much of the taxpayers' money should be committed to these types of projects. And that's why, well, the FTA, the Federal Transit Authority, does have thresholds for cost effectiveness. So when they evaluate these projects, they evaluate the cost effectiveness of the project and will rate them accordingly. And as I talked to you earlier, this project had a very poor rating for cost effectiveness that really should have kept it from advancing to this final stage, which is called an FFGA award, a full federal grant agreement, full funding grant agreement. And so what we're looking at here is a project that's going to be even more costly and require even more taxpayer subsidies than your typical rail project out there. It's a terrible project, which is why I've been so outspoken about this for so long.
Look, that brings to mind two questions. Now, I'm not accusing our Florida politicians of anything, but I do have a right to wonder. And looking at some of the things that I've seen in Minnesota politics, which is where I'm originally from, we in Florida have voiced our opinion saying we don't want this. Therefore, there's a few people, and I've written to a couple of them, Mr. Nelson for one, plus a couple others. It seems like the politicians are the only ones that are really pushing this, other than the companies that are going to build the rail system and sell the system to the state. They obviously want it to go through. They want to make money off of us. What is in it for the politicians? Why are they pushing it? It's something that's going to hurt the state.
Right.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm sorry, Dick. You finish with what you're saying. I'm just agreeing with you there. Go ahead.
Well, it doesn't make sense. Now, what I have seen in the past, certain politicians have had chunks of land that they would make a lot of money on by selling it to a city, county, or state, or the federal government, depending on who needs it. They may have other interests in maybe the company that is going to put the system in. I don't know if any of these people have this type of attachment to this, but one has to wonder, why are you pushing this? What's in it for you?
Well, you know, you have to, I think, look at who funds the campaigns of certain politicians and what it is that those funders are seeking. So some of the proponents of this project are development concerns, realtors, landowners who think they're going to make money around a commuter rail stop or system, because when you do have commuter rail, it requires intense density of development around these stations just to try to offset some of the costs. So, you know, you've got the development interest, special interest, moneyed interests that have a stake in this. But, it's at the expense of the taxpayers who would have to pay for this. So that's why you do have politicians who are pushing this thing relentlessly and have been for years.
Okay. That then again brings up another problem, well, a couple of problems. Number one, Florida is screaming, we've got to buy all this land. There's this great big land grab going on all across the country. Here in Volusia County, they're claiming that we're running out of water. We've got to buy this land so nobody develops on this property because we're getting too many people and we're all going to die of thirst. I don't know. Last time I looked, there's an ocean out there. Oh, well.
We haven't tapped into that, though.
No.
So
they're talking out of both sides of their mouth. They're saying we want to do this and that's going to bring development in close to where the train stops, and that is good, but from what the state is telling us, no, that's bad because we're running out of water and we got to buy this land so people can't live on it.
Right.
So
it's contradictory. you're right. There are limited resources, and water is one of them, So here, you know, with these train systems, you know, they're focused on increasing population and density, which of course requires a greater need for scarce resources and services to support all of that development and density. So, yeah, I know. It's very contradictory, but
I did a little research. I don't know if you've looked at the water situation in Florida.
No.
If you just type in Florida aquifer into your computer, your eyes will pop out of your head. Florida has the largest aquifer in the United States of America. The largest. We have more water than we know what to do with. As a matter of fact, we are feeding water to five other states.
Okay.
And they're telling me I'm going to run out of water.
Well, that's a topic I cannot comment on to you. You have researched this, you know, apparently, and that's just not an area I've researched. But
I would suggest I would suggest our listeners try and look at the water situation in Florida, because it's in contradiction to what they're telling us. And now what you were saying about the politicians look at, well, this group has given me so much money and they can really use this system, so I'm going to back it for them. That is a great big reason why we should have term limits on all political offices. In other words, you are now more worried about your political job than you are the constituents that voted you into office.
Right. Absolutely. I agree with you on that.
There's just no way that this SunRail can work. And I don't know what, so far I've been impressed with most of the things the governor has done in this state. I don't know where he's coming with this. I know that looking at the internet and different sites, he has to be flooded with mail against SunRail.
He has been. I know I've seen some news pieces on that. About 2 weeks ago, there was a blurb that said that the governor's inbox had, oh gosh, I want to say it was about 6,000 emails. Only, no, it wasn't that many. Maybe it was more like 4,000 or 5,000. But anyway, of that, less than 100 of them were in favor of this commuter rail project. And all the polls that have been done that I've seen, whether they were good polls or bad polls, always show an overwhelming opposition to the SunRail project. So it's my hope that the governor would listen to the taxpayers and the people who would pay for this and who are consistently saying we don't want it, as opposed to, just as you pointed out, the few politicians that are pushing this for other reasons. Absolutely. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
I hope the governor stops it. I personally believe he should stop it because he has campaigned as when he was running for governor as someone who would make government accountable and someone who would put the taxpayers first. And he's been doing that, and he did that with high-speed rail. Now we have a SunRail project, which in my opinion, and when you look at the numbers, is a worse project than the high-speed rail project. So to approve this would make no sense, and I think he'd be very inconsistent with his principles and with those things that he campaigned for and when running for governor.
That is the way he ran, and hopefully he's going to. Yeah, that is what his backing was, or his words when he was running for office. And so far, he's been living up to him. He's been looking to the people. He has been getting out, going to town hall meetings, et cetera, asking the people what they feel, which is a lot more than some of our past governors have done. So maybe he's going to live up to his word and say, no, no, the people don't want this. I don't care what you politicians want. That's not what we're about. We're changing things around here.
Right. At a time when we should be cutting spending, and that's what's happening at the state level, why would we agree to incur more debt for a project that we don't even need? You know, and when you're talking about rail projects, it's not a one-time expenditure, as you know. I mean, this is an ongoing, I think the commitment is for 30 years or more. So
no, it's for, they're talking, calculating costs over 20 years instead of 30, from what I've read.
Okay.
That's interesting. Yeah, in the interlocal agreements, the agreements between the counties and the state, it's a 99-year commitment. Now, I think with the federal government, I thought it was 30 years. I have not seen a 20-year number, but it's
definitely
different.
Well, that's Department of Transportation, so I'm not, I mean, that I could be taking that out of context, but that's what I'm reading.
That's very possible. 20 years sounds like it would be about right.
Right. The DOT from Florida in 2009, and it may have gone up, it estimated that the SunRail would cost $2.6 billion over 30 years to build and operate. Mm-hmm. But the latest information, and this is as of today, from the DOT in your state, puts the cost at $1.28 billion. And they say that the savings came from eliminating bond funding and calculating costs over 20 years instead of 30. They also mention that the state taxpayers will pay at least $585 million to build a line. Local taxpayers will contribute at least $153 million. And state and local governments will split construction cost overruns. And the state will cover any operating losses in the first 7 years, and locals will pick up operating losses after that. Now, on that, continuing on that, what, you know, everybody's worried about, and I understand, you know, the monetary expense and, you know, it's 31 miles long and how to get from point A to point B. What is your take on what people are feeling about whether it's going to add jobs to the economy?
Well, you know, now I've got a couple of opinions on this. Number one, you know, commuter rail is supposed to be about mass transit. It's supposed to be about relieving traffic congestion and providing transportation. Well, when the facts came out that this would only move about 2,100 people, that it had poor ridership projections, then the discussion was, well, you know, we really need to have this because it's going to be great for jobs. And then it was economic development, and now it's quality of life. It has morphed into all these different reasons we need to have it. On the jobs projection, it's real interesting to me. Those numbers have changed over the last 2 or 3 years and have grown exponentially. I looked at an FDOT report from 2008 that was provided to a committee in the state legislature that was dealing with the SunRail deal, the CSX deal. And it said, the consultant report said, first year job projection, 374 jobs, which is minuscule. And when you consider $1.2 billion first year startup, that's like $3 million a job. So then these numbers came out saying, oh, you know, with it, we're going to have 13,000 jobs created as a result of SunRail. Well, I think what they've done is just multiplied the 374 by 30, and they've come up with, you know, some figure for a 30-year time frame. I just I don't see any validation to the numbers or substantiation. And if it was such a great job creator, I would imagine there would be a rail project in every region of the country, and there's not. So I'm not a believer in the numbers that are being put out there.
Being the old duffer
and what kind,
that I
and what
am.
Kind of, and think about this, too. The types of development that typically occur around rail stations are retail and food establishments and that sort of thing. Are those the kind of jobs? Is that the kind of industry that we want to invest in? Or do we want the high-paying jobs? You know, where does it, where are we going? What's our future?
Right. Typically, what you have in jobs like this follow a lot of what the politicians brag about, especially the Obama administration. I have created X number of jobs. What he's not telling the people is he has created temporary construction jobs. Once the construction is over, these people are now again out of work. What I have also seen, and it's typical, this is a rail line. What you find, now you do have to have people that maintain the track, maintain the equipment, the trains, everything else. Where you get those people from is not people that are unemployed. It's people that are working for other rail lines that are going to transfer over.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, they're already doing the job. Maybe they're working for Amtrak, and this place is closer, so they're going to move over here and work for SunRail now because it's closer to where they live. It has not created a new job. Any jobs that are created would be temporary, not permanent work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what about just getting back to the premise of you know, mass transit, and what do you do to increase mobility? And, you know, there are other solutions out there besides these fixed rail projects. And so why not explore some of those other solutions as opposed to investing in something we know that is not going to do the job? But you're committed to it once you do it.
Mm-hmm. How long did you say this rail line is going to be from Volusia to Orange County?
Well, if phase two, if this thing happens, phase one is what's on the table right now, and that's from DeBary in Volusia County down to Orange County. The phase two portion would go through Osceola County, and so the total length of the project, phase one and two, would be 61 miles.
So the one stage would just be 30 miles.
Yeah, about 32, yeah. Mm-hmm.
About 32. I travel further than that if I want to go down to Kennedy Space Center, and I'm in Port Orange. That is a very, very short line. I mean, in Minnesota, I traveled twice that distance to go to work. How would a train help me in a situation like that?
Well, you know, this is what they say. They say that, you know, you'll be able to sit in a nice, comfortable train if you live in Volusia County and you work in Orlando, so you'll be able to sit on a train instead of sitting on I-4 in traffic. And the quality of life piece is, golly, you'll get to work on the internet and on your computer while you're sitting on this train car. That's what's been
people
promoted.
Are doing that while they're driving their cars. What's the difference?
Well, that's scary, but you're right. Well, and you know what? This was really interesting. This was about 2 weeks ago. The Downtown Development Board, Downtown Orlando Development Board, and Mayor Buddy Dyer put out an email blast or an email newsletter about the benefits of SunRail, why we have to have SunRail. So we got a copy of this and went through each of the points, and then we did a myths versus the facts about SunRail. But one of the myths or one of the claims that was made by the Downtown Development Board that made us all chuckle was the fact that they're stating that, you know, SunRail can be part of a big strategy, you know, by we won't be quite as dependent on oil, and therefore there will be a reduction in terrorist attacks on U.S. citizens as a result. And so this is another reason that we need to support SunRail. So we've seen a lot of very wild claims about, you know, why this is going to be such a great project and why we need it. And actually, what's interesting, too, is, and you probably know this, Dick, just from reading the papers, but I saw this about Amtrak. They are actually beefing up security all over the country to be on the alert for any terrorist attacks, I guess with the 10th anniversary of 9/11, and then the fact that there have been claims by terrorist organizations.
What was your question going to be?
Pardon?
I'm sorry?
What is your question?
Sorry.
What do you mean? What was that?
That was Tom. I'm sorry.
I was trying to screen a caller we have. I'll be right back. How about that? You guys keep talking.
Okay.
Okay.
I didn't know he was on. Welcome, Tom.
All right.
Somebody threw an idea up in the air not too long ago. And a lot of big cities are doing it. Now, I have driven from Daytona Beach area to downtown Orlando during rush hour traffic. And I-4 is not really that bad. It really isn't. If you want to see a bad freeway, go up to Minnesota and take Highway 35E or 35W. Out of St. Paul or downtown Minneapolis and head north. Mm-hmm. That is traffic congestion, and it isn't the size cities that we have here.
And there is this fallacy that that commuter rail or rail systems reduce congestion. Actually, they contribute to it because, we were talking earlier, if you've got these rail stations, you've got to have high-density development. Well, with high-density development comes more cars. So the net result is an increase in cars on the roadways, not a decrease. And a really good example of that is Atlanta, and I lived there for several years. And, you know, Atlanta has the MARTA system. And you've never seen more traffic or worse traffic or sprawl in your life than in Atlanta. So it just does not do what people want it to do.
No, it doesn't. Not at all. There's no way. If they wanted to accomplish something, first of all, we're not going to get rid of our dependence on oil until we tell the Arabs to drink their oil and we start using our own oil. And we can put their oil deposits to shame with what we've got in this country. We don't need their oil. Having said that, people say we have to get rid of our dependence on oil, so we have to go to this rail system. Mm-hmm. They better start looking at what they have in their lives that are made with oil. Mm-hmm. Let's start with their computers. Everything plastic is made of oil. Anything that's rubber in their house is made with oil. There is probably oil in some of the fabrics of their clothing. Their telephone in the house, if they have a landline, is oil. Their TV is oil. If you want to get rid of your dependence on oil, back your mouth up with actions. Take all that stuff in your house and throw it out. Quit using oil products.
Right.
Now that we're going to get rid of our dependence. Pardon, Tom.
Hey, how you doing? And Beth, it's a pleasure to meet you. Paula, thanks for taking the reins today. I'm back from the future. It was a long time, and if you don't know what I'm talking about, last week's show I said we were going to do it today, but this is too important with a Sunrail meeting going on tomorrow, and then by July 1st, Governor Rick Scott said he's going to make a decision. So we're going to dedicate it to Sunrail. But on Wednesday, and you may have introduced the guest that we're going to have on Wednesday, Dick, but we will run an extended show, and I will tell you about all the legislation that's going to occur between now and 2020, since I just got Back from the Future. It's a little play on the movies Back from the Future, and you are going to be stunned at some of the things that have gone on in our country in the future, but we have a chance to get there. So that's what Wednesday's show is going to be about, as our special guest. And I'll let you introduce, talk about her in a minute, Dick, if you have not already. But I'm down in Caracas, Venezuela. Got here a little bit late. There was a little weather, so that's my tardy. I apologize for that. And it sounds like you guys are having a great show. Beth, again, thanks for coming on the show. I have a thing to ask ever since we decided to do the show. Has anybody in the Orlando area, any of our state legislators, considered, did they look at the cost of doing deck on the I-4?
You know what, Tom? I think Dick needs to repeat your question. I'm having a hard time hearing you for some reason. You're just breaking up
okay.
A little bit. What was that about the legislators?
Yeah. The problem is I apologize to everybody. I'm broadcasting over the internet from Caracas, Venezuela. And the internet down here, just the food and health care, but it's not very good. So I apologize, and that's just the way it is. But, yes, did any of our genius state legislators or anybody in government consider and look at the cost of putting an upper deck on the I-4?
Have any of our legislators looked at putting an upper deck on I-4? Is that the question?
What he's talking about
Correct.
Is doubling up on the freeway.
Yes.
You put a freeway over a freeway.
Right. I have not heard anyone talk about that at all.
Okay, well, I'm going to tell you why, because there are plenty of places across the country and states that have done it, and it's not as expensive as the one-lane widening that they did as the excuse for having to put in Sunrail. Sunrail, you've talked about that, and quite honestly, it would probably be cheaper. I've looked at some of the initial numbers, cheaper than Sunrail, and in the long run, absolutely cheaper than Sunrail. You'd add an additional 8 lanes each direction.
Well, that just goes back to the conversation that Dick and I were having a little while ago about there are other solutions out there for dealing with traffic and growing traffic concerns, and jumping on this Sunrail boondoggle just for the sake of saying that you're doing something, it just doesn't make sense. Because once you're committed to a project like this, you're committed to it. All these funds are going to go to supporting this Sunrail project, which is going to take away funds that could be used for something that's actually more beneficial. So, in my opinion, it would be in the best interest of the governor for so many reasons to kill this project. And let's look at things that might be more realistic.
It's funny Tom would bring that up, because just before he come on the air, I was going to say the same thing, that different states have already doubled up on their roads by putting a freeway over a freeway. You want to talk about putting people to work? Look at all of the construction workers that you would have to hire to build a system like that along 4 and the amount of time it would take. Look at the maintenance afterwards. Look at the money it would bring in. Now, they're talking about, the counties are talking about how fabulous this would be, and it's only going to cost the taxpayers X number of dollars when it's done. These are the same counties that have not given their employees increases in, 3 to 5 years? 3 to 5 years with the cost of living going sky high, and the city workers, nobody has gotten a pay increase. Why? because they're blowing money on stupid ideas. They're blowing money buying land.
Mm-hmm.
How are the people going to pay for this if the government won't give them a raise?
Right.
I don't care what you do
so,
for the city. If you cut grass or anything, you haven't had an increase in 5 years.
Right. And that now you bring me to another point. You know, there is a reason that projects and funding for projects like this are supposed to go to the voters. They go to the voters for their approval of a dedicated, quote-unquote, dedicated funding source to sustain of long-term projects. Well, in the case with SunRail, that never happened. The voters were sidestepped on this thing. So that means the funding is, as you're saying, Dick, it is coming from general funds or it's coming from city and county budgets.
Right.
That would
right.
normally use these funds for something else. Yeah. This should have gone to the voters.
Well, here's the bring one thing up, if I'm not getting much, but there have been studies done, and if you look in New York, a lot of the toll fees that are put on roads, a lot of those toll fees are being used to pay for transit and subway. Just send out to email.
Paula, can you make him out?
Nope. I cannot hear him.
Me neither.
But you're really breaking up bad, Tom.
We do have somebody on the line that has a question. I'm going to put him on the air. His name is Roy. Roy, go ahead with your question. Okay.
Bye-bye. Thank you for your intelligence.
Nice. Anyways, I apologize for that, Beth.
That's all right.
We can't help the stupidity of some people.
Right. Let's talk about the project based on the facts and its merits or non-merits and keep the emotion out of it. Yeah.
I think what we need in this state is a change to our Constitution. Now, I'm familiar with what you were talking about, how the people voted and we were sidestepped by the courts who threw the vote out. We need a change to our Constitution that once the people vote on it and have spoken, the courts do not have authority to step in and throw out the vote.
Right. I absolutely
the people
agree.
Are above the courts in this land.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about time the courts find that out again.
Mm-hmm.
We have to take some of their power away from them.
I agree.
Until we do that, every time we have a vote, if the politicians or the courts don't like it, they're going to throw our vote out. I'm sorry, this country was based on the fact that the people speak, the people control, not the government.
Right.
It was the people of this country that made it great, not the government. It was the people's ingenuity to start jobs, to start companies, and to make money off of these companies. The government didn't build those companies. People did. And when we take it away from the people, the country will fail.
Right.
And their SunRail will go right along with it. That is a government thing. It's not a people thing. The people have spoken.
Well, Beth, I do have a quick question.
Yeah.
Do you think that lots of homes and businesses will be lost to building that commuter rail?
You mean in terms of eminent domain and buying up land?
Yes.
Is that the question? I don't know to what extent that would happen. I know in Winter Park that would not be the case, so I really don't know. Maybe in some other areas, but I really couldn't tell you that.
Okay.
I would imagine somewhere along the line they're going to have to buy some land from somebody, unless
right.
it's already owned completely by the government.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, how do you think it would affect the environment as far as, you know, all the extra, you know, whatever they've got going on down there about, you know, environmental or contamination, possible environmental and contamination issues?
Well, there has to be an environmental assessment that's done for all of these projects. And the original plan for this project was that the equipment was going to be these diesel multiple units. They were going to be have lower emissions. They were quieter. They were lighter. That was the original part of this project. That got changed along the way when that company that manufactures those cars went out of business. And so now we've got diesel, you know, 1950s era diesel locomotives, which are heavier and louder. So there was a new environmental assessment that was done, and it did show that, yes, indeed, there will be a higher vibration level, higher noise level, and more emissions put out. So environmentally, this is worse than what was originally planned. And you're talking at full build with the 61-mile corridor, 56 commuter trains a day. And these trains, you know, this corridor runs through a lot of small towns and neighborhoods. And where I live in Winter Park, we have about 13 or 14 rail crossings, and they all go through neighborhoods. So.
And how do you feel that will affect the noise along the route? What do you
feel? It's going to be noisy. It's going to be so noisy. And part of the deal, too, is that CSX still gets to use its tracks 50% of the time. And it is in the contract between the state and CSX that CSX can run unlimited freight during the evening hours. So you've got unlimited freight, you've got Amtrak, you've got 56 passenger rail trains. And I will tell you that who would want to live around that? Who would want to be in a neighborhood that was located close to that? It's going to be noisy. It's going to be dangerous. We know crime accompanies rail stations. I think it's going to bring down our property values. I think it's going to have an impact on quality of life. I think it's a terrible project.
Now, do you have any information as to how often the SunRail trains will run?
Every 15 minutes at full build, phase one and phase two, every 15 minutes.
Okay, I have to wonder, being an ex-railroad man, years ago, passenger trains had the right-of-way over freight trains. So if a passenger train was coming, a freight train had to get off on a sidetrack someplace and let the passenger train through. Mm-hmm. With the passenger train service basically dying with the great majority of railroads, that's why we have Amtrak, that was changed. Now freight trains have the right-of-way over passengers, and they will be put on a sideline while the freight train goes through. I am wondering if that is true with the SunRail. If there's a freight train coming, is that SunRail going to have to pull over to the side and stop and wait for the freight?
That's a good question. It was my understanding that SunRail would have the priority.
Then they have to change the laws again, because the law right now says the freight train has the right-of-way.
Well, there's something to look into, Dick. I don't know. I can't comment on the laws.
Well, I can't either, but that's the way the law is right now. Unless they've got something in the works to where they would change it for the SunRail system in that particular area. But I don't see how you can discriminate just to one certain area when you're making laws. Laws are for the land, not for one particular area. That is discrimination. Our court said we can't do that. It is a failing system, and I don't know where these politicians are dreaming they're going to get the money from the taxpayers. Obviously, they haven't talked to the banks to find out how many houses are in foreclosure and how many have been foreclosed on.
Mm-hmm.
And what is irking me very deeply, they talk about the unemployment numbers. Well, they're not really quite as bad. What they're looking at are the people that are drawing unemployment. Double what they're drawing unemployment for people that are not working. They are not counting the people that are still unemployed and have run out of their unemployment benefits. They have no money coming in. Their benefits are gone. They're still unemployed. But we're only looking at those that are drawing unemployment for our stats and figures so the politicians look good.
Yeah, yeah.
And
well,
I don't know where this money's coming from. I'm sitting pretty good. I'm retired. I have a very safe pension. I'm okay. A great majority of people are not in the position that I'm in, and I feel for them.
I do, too. Well, you know, another issue with this SunRail project, I believe, is that you've got sitting county and city commissioners who are signing off on this. Not all of them, but there's a majority right now. But they're signing off on this, but the state would be paying for the operating costs for the first 7 years. So it's not going to be for another 7 years before the, you know, you've really got to deal with this situation. So future sitting commissioners and taxpayers are going to have to come up with ways to pay for this in the future. So I guess what I'm saying is I just feel it's not responsible for elected representatives to be making these kinds of decisions that they don't have to deal with, but they're going to push it off to the future commissioners and taxpayers to deal with. I don't think that's fair. I don't think that's right. And I have found that a vast majority of these elected officials are not familiar with the details of the project or the cost of the project or the details of the agreements that they signed on to. That's scary to me as a taxpayer.
That is very scary.
And then again, that goes back to the back to why the voters should be voting on this type of thing and a funding source.
It's amazing the things that our government wants to shove down our throats, even though we don't want it. We have no use for it.
Well, and whatever happened to listening to what the people want, you know? I have always said this. There's a difference between being an elected representative and being a politician. To me, an elected representative is someone who truly represents the people, the taxpayers, and what's in their best interest. The politicians are looking out for what's in their best interest and what's in the best interest of special interest. And there's a difference.
You have to look at the livelihood of a great many politicians. And unfortunately, a lot of this hits the Democratic Party, but it's true. If you go to law school, you become an attorney. If you don't have a good practice, you've got two choices. You buddy up to some politician and get an appointment as a judge so you can live off of the taxpayers and not have to worry about looking for clients. Your check comes in every month. Or you can run for political office and, again, live off of the taxpayers. Then you don't have to go out and look for clients and live off of your chosen profession.
Mm-hmm.
You have a great many attorneys in the political field, too many of them.
Yeah.
If you're a good attorney, make money in your own profession. Don't live off of us.
Right. I agree. You're preaching to the choir. Absolutely.
I wonder what happened to Tom that he's breaking up so bad.
Oh, bad internet connection where he is.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm sure. I miss having his wit and wisdom on the show.
Back on Wednesday.
Yeah.
Well,
do we have some local news to catch up on, Paula?
Say it again, please.
Do we have some local news to catch up on?
Yeah, we will in a minute. I wanted to ensure that, you know, Beth, you know, got her point across, and I wanted to
I think she did a marvelous job getting her point across.
Oh, definitely. Most definitely. And I want to thank you for taking the time out of your busy afternoon and talking to us and answering questions. And it was greatly appreciated.
It was a pleasure talking to you and having you on the show.
Well, it was my pleasure, and I thank you for contacting me and asking me to do this. And like I said, it's very important. I've been involved with this for 5 years now. And I am tired of it, but hopefully the governor will do the right thing on Friday. And I would encourage those Florida listeners to contact Governor Rick Scott and let them know how they feel about how their money's being spent and what kind of projects are getting approved. So, you know, we can put the governor's email address out there or a phone number if you want.
Go ahead if you have it handy.
I've got it. Actually, I've got a phone number here for the governor's office, which is area code 850-488-7146. That's 850-488-7146. Or he can be emailed at rick.scott@eog.myflorida.com. So,
and I wanted
encourage
to ensure that individuals do know that they have access to www.sunrail.com to get all their information together and to present their questions to the governor accordingly, so that they understand, you know, what impact this would have, you know, going through these various, you know, cities, towns, and counties.
Right. Now, our group has set up a website called vetosunrail.org, and that site consists of just articles, facts, reports, research, a lot of information about Sunrail and about other rail projects. And I would encourage folks to visit that website and see the information we've got posted there.
Definitely.
Yes. Before you go, Beth, there was something that I thought about as you were talking, and then it slipped my mind again. We want to find out how to move people, and the government is trying to figure it out, and they can't really put their finger on it. They got an idea what they might want to do. Maybe they should reincarnate Walt Disney and ask him how he created the people movers. Because Walt is doing a fantastic job at the Mouse House.
Yeah, that's right. Well, and you know what? What about old-fashioned carpooling? You know, if you just – we had run some numbers on this. If you just had the, you know, 3,700 people carpool, and if you paid them $50 a month to do that, it would take 444 years to equal the first year startup of this project, which is $1.2 billion. I mean, it's crazy. So
I'm amazed at Florida. Driving the freeways, there are very, very few places for carpooling. In Minnesota, it's loaded with them, and an awful lot of people carpool. Now, I've been out of work, retired for a number of years. I was carpooling with two people from where I worked. I would drive one week, somebody else would drive the next week, somebody the third week. But there's no place down here to really carpool. We don't have no place for the people to park their cars by the freeway exit and entrance ramps to make it available to them.
Right. Yeah, you need those parking lots. Absolutely.
But in fact, I think on four from Daytona Beach to Orlando, there's only one. And that's right outside of Orlando.
Wow. Didn't know that.
That's a little bit late.
Yeah, that's a little late. All right. Well,
thank you for coming on the show.
Yeah, thank you so much, Dick, and thank you, Paula. I really do appreciate what you're doing and having me on.
You're welcome.
We're trying.
Here
we are. All right. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
What have we got for local news?
Well, I think that Tom would like this one. An article showed up today on Politico about Al Gore. An essay puts him back in the spotlight. Democrats may not exactly be thrilled with the idea, but Al Gore has thrust himself back into the spotlight as President Barack Obama's green conscience. On Wednesday, with a frontal attack on Obama's environmental record, the former VP, in true Gore fashion, via a 7,000-word Rolling Stone essay, proved that he still commands an audience despite a decade out of public office. Gore's harsh words put the White House on the defensive at a time when it would rather be focused on the economy and ending the Afghanistan war. And he also stirred up conflicting emotions for many Democrats who aren't sure they want to deal with someone so polarizing, so close to the 2012 campaign. Gore calls for climate action are certainly not music to Senate Democrats running in tight races in 2012, including Sherrod Brown of Ohio, Amy Klobuchar of Minnesota, Claire McCaskill of Missouri, and Debbie Stabenow of Michigan, John Tester of Montana. He can be an inconvenient presence for Republicans as well, and earlier this month he applauded Mitt Romney on his blog for bucking Rush Limbaugh and Tea Party conservatives on climate science. Bye-bye nomination is what Limbaugh said of Romney's remarks.
It never ceases to amaze me how many people will gather around Gore when he has shown to be just a little bit above an idiot level. The man has no idea what he's talking about on any subject that he talks about. I would love to see his college grades, where he stood in his class.
Mm-hmm.
That would be amazing to me.
Mm-hmm. And this Justin as well, Herman Cain is getting a bit of Newt Gingrich treatment. His state director and lone New Hampshire staffer has resigned, leaving the campaign without a New Hampshire presence, at least for the time being. Veteran GOP organizer Matt Murphy confirmed today that he stepped down last Friday as director of Herman Cain's campaign in the first in the nation primary state, and he said the campaign refused to invest in a serious effort here.
That seems to be why the other campaign fell apart also.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't seem to be to the staffers and stuff, the campaign workers, to be a serious effort in going after the presidency.
Mm-hmm. Rod Blagojevich is found guilty on 17 charges of corruption-related charges, including some related to his attempt to sell an appointment to President Barack Obama's open Senate seat, and that just came in as well.
Wow.
Yep.
Did they say what the sentencing is going to be or when they're going to have it?
Let me see. That I had not seen. That there was actually any information on that. Let me give me a couple of seconds. His first trial ended last August with his conviction of one charge, which was lying to the FBI. The second trial, which began in April, stretched on for more than 2 months, but included less evidence and fewer witnesses than the first trial. He didn't testify during the first trial. He did in the second, taking the stand for 7 days of questions by his defense attorney and prosecutor. No. I don't see anything in here where it says when he's going to be sentenced or for how long, for that matter.
What is amazing here, I think, is now you've got a politician that was doing something wrong, and it was brought to light, and he was charged with the crime. However, we know there are different levels of crimes going on in this country. I think we have greater politicians that are committing greater crimes. The public is well aware of them, and I don't see any charges being brought by any of the legal eagles that are out there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm not lessening the crime that he committed. You don't sell a political seat. However, there's other crimes out there that should be brought to light, such as treason. And there's a number of people in politics that have committed the crime of treason.
I'm going to pick up a call really quick to see who's on the other side, okay?
Sure.
Dick, I've got Tom on the other line.
I need to read it. It'd be better if you read it.
Go ahead.
Hey, everybody. I can't do anything with this computer, or it's going to slow it down, and I don't want to break up the voice. But, Paula, check your email real quick. I sent you a tease for Wednesday's show. where I'm going to talk about the. Yeah, go ahead.
All right. As I arrived in the year 2030, I immediately go online and download major federal legislation and judicial rulings since 2012. The first legislation that catches my eye is March 1st, 2014, H.R. 4590, the Healthy Life and Affordable Food Act. It sounds good on the surface, but I discover that it is 3,800 pages long.
Yeah, you don't want to miss this. That's just the tip of the iceberg. I'm going to tell you about the legislation that comes over the course of the next... We start with some of these things as to what the federal government is doing to us right now. We've got to stop it. We've got to turn the tide before we reach 2030 and all of this legislation is written. Now, of course, you know I'm tongue-in-cheek with some of this. You got to understand that. I didn't go back in time, or I didn't go forward in time, but it's to make a point. So you don't want to miss it. It's really good stuff.
It sounds interesting.
I believe what the healthy lifestyle and I've got all the details of the bill, all the details. I give an executive summary and the Affordable Food Act. Yeah, it's big. You're not going to want to miss that. So if you're listening now, tune in on Wednesday or download Wednesdays. It's going to be big. And Dick, did you already introduce who our guest on Wednesday is going to be as well?
No, I didn't. That is going to
go ahead and tell us who we've got coming on.
Karen Schoen will be on the show Wednesday. Let me look at my notes here real quick. Oh, boy. I can't find my notes on her.
Well, just off the top of your head, is she going to be talking about education, Agenda 21?
Right. She is up on education, on what is going on throughout the whole school system within our country, not just in the Florida area. And it's pretty scary the way they're tying things up. And just recently, a study was done that showed all of the students across the country have a very small knowledge of the history of this country. In other words, they could not pass a true history test. And that is throughout the whole country, which means we're not teaching history.
Yeah,
she wants to enlighten us on that.
Excellent. Okay. Good. And I will be in the U.S. for that show, so the broadcast will sound a lot better.
I hope so.
But I'll let you guys take it out, finish up what you're doing, and I won't say another word.
Now, that is hard to believe. Are you still there, Paula?
I am. Still here. I'm still here,
okay.
And I think we're going to wrap it up for the day. And Dick, I appreciate you coming on and guest hosting and helping out. It's greatly appreciated.
Tom's got some very big shoes to fill, and I don't think I quite fill them, but it was fun. Well, thank you too, Paula, and we will see you Wednesday.
Wonderful. Enjoy.
Bye-bye.
All right, Paula, take care. We'll see you Wednesday.
Listening to the American Hour with Commander Tom Garcia on the USA Talk Radio Network.